up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Drantz. He covers the team for The Athletic. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. How's it going, Drantz?
Doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm great.
Love that.
Yeah, me too.
Love that.
It's awesome.
I'm glad you're doing great.
What a feeling.
It was a fun Canucks game last night. And we've had too few occasions to come on and start the show and say, that was a heck of a Canucks game last night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to do more of, because we're Canucks Talk.
It's nice.
And that was a fun game.
It makes the show more fun.
With a really gritty third period performance from the Vancouver Canucks, like tip of the cap, a captain in Quinn Hughes gutting it out at I don't know, 60%?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you could see the seams of that on occasion, but not in a way that would earn any criticism, just in a way that would add to the level of respect I've got for the way that that guy competes. You've got him and Elias Pettersson. A real love fest post-game.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Something, very interesting.
It's like the Canucks showed some grit, some gumption. They won a must-win game. It was a comeback win filled with drama, and there's actual post-game good vibes.
Yeah. They gassed each other up post-game.
What? The Canucks? In the year of our Lord 2025? Let's go.
Lots to get into today. Your Athletic colleague, Harmon Dial, will make his first appearance on the show in a while. Happy to have Harmon back in the mix and joining us as a guest. That's coming up at 12:30.
And we're dialing up some.
That's right.
More Athletic content.
Yes. We simply can't get enough of it here on the show. So we'll get even more from Harmon Dial at 12:30. But before we do that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 13th. The headline is the Canucks get a massive 2 points in Calgary with a 4-3 shootout win after, as you mentioned, a third period comeback. Their first ultimately successful third period comeback of the year. I believe they had pushed the game into overtime in other instances, but had not actually secured the victory. So the first time all year they go into the third trailing and leave the game with 2 points. Now,
yikes.
Yeah, not ideal. Turns out when you can't score, third period comebacks are tricky. It becomes a lot more difficult when you can't score.
Most nights, the Canucks struggle to get to 17 shots total, and then they do it on the second leg of a back-to-back with their season on the line. Now, watching the game...
In one period.
Watching the game, I thought the Canucks came out and pushed in the third hard, which you expect. And then I'd say like minute 13 through minute 9, they looked like you expect a team on the second leg of a back-to-back to look. They started to look like they were skating in mud a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and finally began to deliver on, you know, what you fear from a team in the situation that the Canucks found themselves in, right? Which is... Oh no, they might really have trouble sustaining the sort of pressure they need to successfully chase this game. On one hand though, you kind of knew once Kadri missed on that glorious feed from Jonathan Huberdeau and great save by Kevin Lankinen, who paid off the decision to start him back to back. He was excellent, robbed Kadri all alone from a dangerous angle. Fantastic save, season saving save potentially. And yeah, from there, that shift that Pettersson scores on, you know, you have the Hoglander entry. Mm-hmm. You had an earlier entry attempt. The Canucks were out skating the Calgary Flames as they did for much of the third period. You had a really smart, skillful hesitation play from Pettersson feeding it back to the point. You had a good shot through traffic from Mancini. And then you had Pettersson, who looked willful throughout the game, right? Like there was a sensation or a feeling watching him play that he was the most dangerous forward on the ice. I'd say that's the first time all season it's felt that way. And, you know, probably not the sledgehammer he's back that I've been talking about, but at least the feeling was right. You didn't have to look up a natural stat trick page.
Yes.
You didn't need to manufacture fake reasons to be confident in what you were seeing. That was like a legitimately impressive. He had a certain a level of juice or aura on the ice. He looked dangerous throughout the game. He looked willful. Yeah, it was a Rizzy performance.
Aura.
What? You don't like aura?
We're really trying to appeal to the youth here.
How are you, fellow kids? Seriously, there was a vibe.
Yes.
Okay,
That's more our speed.
Yeah, I'm trying to find something that's not youth coded. What should vibe. I use? What are your suggestions?
I feel like vibes are like elder millennial enough for us. Yeah. Lena's saying yes. That's sufficiently dorky for us to say
vibe
vibes.
Is allowed.
Yeah, vibe is allowed.
What about aura?
Aura's a bit boomer.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought aura was like what the kids were saying.
It's coming back. It's making a comeback.
Well, there's
Zach
aura.
Is the youngest. Zach is way younger than you, Lena. So you might just be out of touch here.
Zach is barely legal to work here.
Zach, do your friends say aura?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go.
You have connected with the youth.
For me, aura is like a healing spell cast in Final Fantasy III. Anyway. The truth is that qualitatively felt familiar. And look, it's one game. Maybe the next game looks more like what we saw earlier in the year, or maybe it looks more like what we saw in like the Dallas game. You know what I mean? Where it's like you can see it progressing, but it's not like that.
No.
Maybe it's not like that every night, but we know that momentum can sometimes carry over. Like maybe that is a moment in the Canucks season that we'll look back on as a turning point. It's not necessarily the case, but certainly if you're a fan of this team, enjoy today, pump out your chest, and feel free to dream.
So on Pettersson's performance, I feel like based on the reaction I've seen post-game, during the game last night, and then carrying on this morning, that I was maybe less impressed than a lot of other people in real time watching it from Elias Pettersson. It certainly wasn't a signature game for him. It wasn't a signature Elias Pettersson performance. And that's really what so many of us are waiting for. And I think that's when, you know, as they were talking about in the morning show today, you can really start breaking out your John Wick I'm back memes when he does have one of those signature performances. Now, having said that, a timely goal goes a long way. Like, you're talking about vibes and a big time timely goal in a really important game for your team. That's a big deal. I mean, how many times earlier of this year have we said, hey, look, maybe you're not at 100%, but you have to find those moments. You have to find the opportunities to help your team win. And he did that last night, and that really counts. It's definitely progress the way I'm thinking of it, because I said this earlier in the week or last week even. I can't remember now. The standard I'm trying to apply to Pettersson is if he turned in a given performance during the absolute peak of his powers, right, from like January 2022 to the All-Star game last year. So basically a 2-year stretch. If he had played that game last night in the middle of that stretch, what would we say about it? We wouldn't call it a signature performance.
We'd have said another one.
A good game.
We would have done the Rick Ross thing.
Good game for Elias Pettersson, and he scored a clutch goal. That's what we'd say.
Does that appeal to the youth?
I don't know.
Another one?
Another one. Oh, wait, that's DJ Khaled.
I don't know if Khaled's still cool.
I don't
think
so.
Or ever was.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Still a role model to men my size.
But for me, I look at it as that has to be the baseline for Pettersson. Games like that. That has to be the baseline. Performances like that. And for me to really get on the he's back, this is a turning point.
You need to see it consistently.
There's 17 games left. I think we need to see 17 games of that baseline, punctuated ideally by one or two signature performances. And I think everyone understands what I'm saying, right? Those games where, you know, it's 4 points or 3 points, and he is clearly dominating.
Sometimes in the first period.
And he's breaking the game open seemingly at will throughout the night.
Yeah, that was the remember the Bruce Boudreau, like the Boudreau bump version of Pettersson, where it was like, and it's 3-0 Canucks after 10 minutes because Pettersson has fed Kuzmenko for a bunch of tap-ins that Canucks fans are crediting to Kuzmenko, and Mikheyev somehow has also scored, but also Anthony Beauvillier has replaced Mikheyev, and that line hasn't missed a beat.
Yeah.
If only Pettersson could elevate his wingers, right? And then the Canucks would give it all back, of course. But still, that first period, incredible stuff. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Where it's not like that was that level of performance.
No, exactly.
Yeah,
and fair. That's not going to be every night. That's not any every night for any player. But I'm looking for the combination. And I have almost had the sensation
big
of...
Big combo platter guy?
Yeah. Oh, love a combo platter. Surf and turf, are you kidding? I have had almost the sensation watching the conversation, listening, reading since the game last night that I think maybe there's been some forgetting about just what made Elias Pettersson such a great player, just what has made him such a great player through his NHL career, or through the peaks of his NHL career anyways. And it's not just that he racked up points. That's really important, of course. And he had 2 points last night, and that's awesome. That's a big part of it. But that shift-to-shift dominance and the ability to tilt the ice, to bend the game to whatever he wanted to do, that was the peak Elias Pettersson experience, and that's still what we haven't seen. So I'm not trying to take anything away. There was definitely progress. It's good to see, but that's what we need to see. We need to see that as the baseline, and then we need to see that next gear. I will say this. We'll talk about what that meant for the playoff picture in just a second here, but we had a text come in saying from Ty David, last night was great and all, but does it really matter if the Canucks push for the eighth seed? Even if they beat the Jets in round one, they won't be any closer to a championship.
Even if they beat the Jets.
Yeah. And obviously there is still that kind of fatalistic sense of, well, great. Hey, you like what you saw from the Canucks last night in a lot of ways, but what does it all mean? As I said, 17 games left. Is that enough to erase the previous 13 months from Elias Pettersson? Probably not. But if you get 17 games of that as a baseline and one or two signature performances in there, man, does it change your outlook on the player going into the summer and going into next year. It becomes a lot easier to go forward with confidence in the player. So if you're looking for stakes, something that could have real significant long-term meaning for the Canucks in these final 17 games, the Pettersson he's back progress report is a really, really important one. Again, if he gets to that level consistently, it changes things massively for the team.
So think about it this way too, right? You've got Quinn Hughes playing at a level, you know, of health, of like proper physical readiness that I would rate in the 60% range. And the reason that I'd come to that was not his effectiveness, because he's Quinn Hughes. Somehow he was still a game-breaking force for the Vancouver Canucks. Bless him.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a play, I think the third period, where Wiley vet Kevin Rooney. Is it Kevin Rooney? Oh, my God.
I believe so. It's not Wayne.
Lane Rooney. Yeah, Kevin Rooney.
Yeah.
I don't know why I struggled to come up with Kevin. Threw it into, like, was on a rush 2-on-1 against the Canucks and dumped it into Quinn Hughes' side. Very intentionally, by the way. And Hughes declined to beat him to it. Not that Hughes lost the race. Hughes declined to beat him to it, knowing exactly what a player like Rooney is going to do with that opportunity to mash him. Rooney skates to the side. Canucks ended up clearing it without too much danger. But that's a play that tells you everything about where Hughes is at physically. Like, Hughes will never lose a foot race that he doesn't want to lose to Kevin Rooney ever in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And Hughes is willing to take hits to make plays. But at that stage of the game, with what he was dealing with, he was like, nope. Uh-uh. Not tonight. And to be in that state as a tough, competitive player and to be making a decision like that, and to still play 30 minutes and to make a massive difference in the outcome of the game, to be the best player, to be in control of that entire game with his control amplifying as the game went on to the point of having the entire game on a string 3-on-3. Did he take like a 5-minute breather or like a 5-second breather for
yes.
Philip Hronek? And that was basically it.
Yes.
And he dominated the entire thing.
Yes.
Like, holy cow, man. You know, we talked about, I said, like, I'm curious to see what Quinn Hughes's Atlas act looks like, and I got to see it last night. It was just as fun as I'd hoped.
Mm-hmm.
But man, he is absolutely well short. So what does it matter if they make the eighth seed and get eliminated? That tells you how much it matters. Okay? Because, you know, and we learned this during the Four Nations face-off, right? Where it was kind of like a tournament that the league pulled out of their posterior, right? Like, how do we exclude Russia? It's a four nation tournament.
We only had room for four. Sorry, guys.
The NHL going around to people beforehand, they're like, hey, can I interest you in four nations facing off? Everyone's like, I don't know. I don't think so. And then the moment those players stepped on the ice and it mattered to them, immediately it mattered to all of us. Well, Hughes told you how much this matters to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's it. He's willing to make serious physical sacrifices to get a shot at the Winnipeg Jets, regardless of the fact that the Canucks will enter that series is like plus 500 dogs. Who cares? Hughes wants the shot.
They want to do it.
They
want to salvage something from this season and at least have something you can hang your hat on and feel good about going into the offseason.
Heck yeah, they want to do it.
That you push down the stretch and that you're able to come together as a team and do it. And by the way, speaking of Quinn Hughes, just an immense performance. And then the vote of confidence for Pettersson after the game really stood out. I know a lot of people have picked up on it and mentioned it as well, but just you love to hear that from a captain. And it's kind of funny because as much as things have gone so sideways off the ice for the Canucks this year, I also look at Quinn Hughes and think, man, he's done an exceptional job as captain of this team. And you saw it yesterday on display there as well. By the way, somebody texted in, you guys don't have to try to appeal to the youth. Your audience is are 43-year-olds sitting in his car eating a Costco hot dog on his lunch break like I am right now.
We're proud of you,
man. And to that I say, hell yeah, brother.
Love a Costco hot dog.
Love a Costco hot dog on you. Love sitting in your car listening to the radio at lunch. There's nothing better than that.
You know what?
Do not talk to your coworkers. Go sit in your car. And I'm being dead serious. I'm not being sarcastic.
I'm more of a fantasy football podcast guy, but yeah.
Sure.
I'm just kidding. I listen only to Vancouver local sports talk radio.
Only Sportsnet 650. All day, every day. And somebody else texted.
People texting in their ages now.
And also somebody else saying, I'm eating a cheeseburger in my car. So that's what we're for. People who don't want to talk to their coworkers, they just want to sit in their car and eat a cheeseburger in peace. And I relate to it very much.
You know what we call those people, Jamie?
Heroes?
The real heroes.
The real heroes, yeah. Absolutely. By the way, just adding on to the Quinn Hughes vote of confidence in Elias Pettersson. And actually, before I do this and move on to the broadsheet, I will note Connor Zary has a hearing with the Department of Player Safety for his elbow to the back of Elias Pettersson's head. Of course, DPD left the game, didn't return. Nasty, nasty business. So we'll see what comes down for Connor Zary.
I'd expect two. I'd hope it's three.
We'll see. Yeah. It's very, very bad. I don't think you need me to tell you that, but that's a gross one, and we'll see what Connor Zary gets from Department of Player Safety. So as I was saying, building just a little bit, and this isn't the most major note in the broadsheet here, but as I was mentioning, Quinn Hughes' vote of confidence for Elias Pettersson after the game, Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet's NHL insider on the Fan Hockey Show earlier today, noting how much Hughes has supported and kind of had Pettersson's back through everything this season, right? Through the JT Miller stuff. And, you know, of course, there were meetings brokered and all of that. And you'd have to think Quinn Hughes was involved in that. But just in general, that vote of confidence publicly given from Quinn Hughes to Elias Pettersson, Friedman reporting and letting everyone know that that's been the case behind the scenes through all of this as well. And that's a big deal. I mean, how much have we talked about Project convince Quinn Hughes to stay? How that ties into the Rick Tocchet decision, Rick Tocchet's future. And I don't think it's as simple as, well, Quinn Hughes likes Elias Pettersson, therefore you're locked into this player. But if the captain and the guy that you rave about at every opportunity about his work ethic and his professionalism and his maturity, if he is in the, this guy still has it, he can get back to it, he can get back to the heights we've seen from him, I think that should hold a lot of weight. An opinion of a friend, a teammate who's, you know, they spent almost their whole NHL careers together playing with each other. I think that's more than just, hey, captain giving the guy a pat on the back. I think that opinion should be heavily weighted when the Canucks are thinking about Elias Pettersson and when we're thinking about Elias Pettersson too.
Well, I think it already was. Right? I mean, make no mistake about Operation Keep Quinn Hughes. That is not our fictional description of what the Canucks are trying to do. That's, in fact, what the Canucks are going to try and do here.
Yes.
right? Like, it's important context to explain why the club wasn't going to sell Brock Besser for a song, for example, at the trade deadline, and why I don't really think they seriously considered dealing Pew Suter despite there being real interest, right? None of this was done without Hughes being at least in the loop, or at least gauged for his thoughts on it. And Friedman's reporting over the course of the entire season sort of makes that clear if you're reading between the lines. And actually, not even. Like, it's not subtext, it's text.
Yeah.
And of course it is. You know, this is a player, Quinn in Hughes, who, you know, you've got Alvin Rutherford and Tockett in Vancouver, right? That's the leadership troika, triumvirate, whatever fancy schmancy term you prepare for three of the guys in leadership roles, all of whom worked with the Penguins during the Crosby back-to-back cup heyday. And, you know, it's discussed, like, this idea that none of them ever thought that they'd see another guy like that, another leader of that caliber, and now they've sort of stumbled into one. Not stumbled into one, just that I don't think any of them knew that when they came in to Vancouver.
Yeah, I just stumbled in is, I think, fair enough. Because they didn't, like, Quinn Hughes wasn't looked at that by anyone, looked at that way by anyone before they took the job.
Yeah, although they knew enough to make him captain.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not like a surprise. It's just, I think it's a surprise because the caliber of individual you're talking about when you're throwing around comps like that is, you know, put him on our money. Make him our stat holder sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Lineup notes, as mentioned.
Thanks for bailing me out after that stat holder reference.
That's all right.
Woof.
DPD leaves the game after, as I mentioned, getting elbowed in the head by Connor Zary. So we'll see what his status is. Of course, the Canucks have the day off today. They'll practice tomorrow, and then they've got that back-to-back set again, both at home against the Blackhawks on Saturday, and then Utah on Sunday. Tyler Myers missed last night's game as well. So updates on DPD, updates on Tyler Myers we'll be watching for. And then, of course, anything on Thatcher Demko and just the next goaltending decision in a set of back-to-backs that Rick Tockett has to make as well. Playoff and standings update. So one of the interesting things about that game, as you mentioned, asymmetrical, right? A regulation loss for the Canucks would have been absolutely devastating. A regulation win is a big deal, but it also doesn't, or sorry, an overtime win, a shootout win, I should say, is a big deal, but it also doesn't dramatically reset the state of the playoff race necessarily. So Calgary still with the better points percentage. They have 71 points in 64 games. The Canucks have 71 points in 65. St. Louis, 69 in 65. Utah, also 69 in 65. They beat the Ducks last night. So the Canucks just 2 points ahead of both St. Louis and Utah with the same number of games played, tied with Calgary in points, but have played one additional game. And all of that in Dom's model adds up to the Canucks' chances down at 44% yesterday. They tick back up to 48% after that result today.
Wow. Yeah, and the betting markets, for what it's worth, reacting a little bit more than that. The Canucks are plus money still, though, to make the playoffs, plus 110 to make the playoffs, minus 140 to miss. So actually, Dom's model's higher on them as it has been all season. For what it's worth, the Utah Hockey Club improved their odds, plus 375 last night. They were plus 400 previously. St. Louis, plus 425. And the Calgary Flames are, of course, going to take a hit. They were plus 160 yesterday, plus 240 today. More than anything, it's like that was an asymmetrical result, right? The Canucks couldn't afford a regulation loss, right? At all. But the Calgary Flames could absolutely afford an overtime loss without. Now, that said, it was still a huge missed opportunity, I think, to dent a team that, as we just saw, right? The big difference between these two sides is the Canucks have Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, and the Calgary Flames do not. Right? And that's sort of what's going to drive, I think, disparate outcomes. It's why the Canucks should be favored to make the playoffs over Calgary, even though Calgary has been a far more consistent, higher floor team that has credibly outworked the Canucks throughout the season on balance.
That's the whiteboard for today. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. We'll take a break. Harmon Dial from The Athletic next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.